that Los Angeles sunshine coming through.
Please stand by. Prime Video and Westworld director Jonathan Nolan invite you to Fallout.
After 200 years, we don't know much about what's up there. Violence, desperation, lawlessness.
Everyone wants to save the world, and they just disagree on how.
We're gonna get across that wasteland, and we're gonna do it together.
Fallout. All episodes available now on Prime Video.
Guess who else had technical difficulties? That was the Nashville Predators in Columbus. How about that?
Oh, boy. I guess that's what you want to call it, I guess. That's a nice term to way to put it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was rocky stuff, especially on Wednesday night's game. It was hard to watch. It looked like pre-hot streak Preds. It looked like February Predators. How about that? It did not look good at all. It did not look like they were trying to claim a playoff spot. Let's put it that way. But we're going to get into that. We're going to talk about it. We're going to unpack it because we have to talk about these playoff scenarios. There are so many different playoff scenarios right now for the Nashville Predators on how they can get in. And it's pretty – there's a lot of different ways this can go going over these two games for the Predators, last three games for the Dallas Stars. So we got to get into all that, talk about the game, talk about the Hurricanes. Can we finally figure out a way to beat these guys? So we're going to get into that. We've got to talk about what's gripping the NHL world, and that is the whole debacle with Tom Wilson and NHL player safety and the New York Rangers and the Washington Capitals dropping the gloves right at the face-off. Mm. Bad look for the NHL. It just keeps going on and on. It's all you can see if you're searching NHL right now. And if you've got fringe hockey fans who are thinking about becoming fans and that's all you see right now, it's a bad look. But we're going to get into it. We're going to talk about it, put out all the facts, what's going on with that. And then we're going to end the episode 42 of the Catfish on Ice podcast. We're going to end it looking back at the 2016-17 Predators team that took everyone by storm. Snuck into the playoffs late in the season, just like this current Preds team's trying to do, and went to the Stanley Cup. So we're going to kind of try to compare the two teams. Is there a comparison? Are they even similar? Is there any similarities at all? Is that team way better than this team? We will definitely talk about that. So let's get into it. First and foremost, we are presented by DraftKings. And that is the top-rated sports book in America. And let me tell you, you can have so much fun on the DraftKings Sportsbook app. It's one of those things where you can do daily fantasy. If you're into sports betting, you can do that as well. And we got a big boxing match coming up this weekend. And this is what DraftKings has for you right now. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code THPN when you sign up. For a limited time, all new users can bet $1 to win $55 on this weekend's main event. That's right. DraftKings Sportsbook is going all out for new users by offering them the chance to win $55 when they're placing a bet of just $1 on this weekend's big fight. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Must be 21 years or older in New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania only. New customers apply. Restrictions apply as well. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. And if you have a gambling problem, please call 1-800-GAMBLER or in Indiana, call 1-800-9 with it. So go get in on that action for sure. go get that app. Go get the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use promo code THPN. So I'm fired up for this episode because I feel like so much has happened since our last episode. I don't know how you guys are feeling, but I feel like a lot's happened in just 3 days.
A lot's happened for better or worse, I would say. Especially yeah, in the last few days.
It's been wild.
Yeah.
Every time you open hockey Twitter, I mean, it's like insane. Just so it's much out there, so much going on.
It's fun, though.
It's fun from a distance. But if you're a Preds fan, you're focusing on all this stuff going on with the Tom Wilson stuff, which we're going to get into. But let's focus on the Nashville Predators first. They did not take care of business in Columbus.
Nope.
They failed to do that. They just couldn't get it going. And I kind of hinted at it a little bit in the last episode. The Columbus Blue Jackets are a team that I do not understand how they are a last place team right now. They have a lot of guys on their team who can make things happen. They are a stingy defensive team. And I'm not giving any excuses to the Preds right now. Don't mistake what I'm saying right now. But I knew that this was not going to be a cruise control type of series. No game in the NHL is that way. But The Preds looked like they were in cruise control. I did not like their effort on Wednesday night at all. They couldn't complete a pass to save their life. The passing was just like they tried to move up the ice, and it was instantly either given away to Columbus or it was just a mess. It didn't look smooth at all. If you were trying to get a new hockey fan into hockey and you showed them that game, they'd have been like, this is boring. Like, this is like ugly stuff to watch. Yeah. I mean, that's just kind of that's kind of the brunt of it. But Colin, how about you fire it up here and give us your first takeaways from how the Preds looked in Columbus?
Yeah, it was just sloppy. It looked like bad habits that were coming back from, you know, when we started the season out and kind of had that rough start, that rough patch, you know, pretty much all the way through mid-March. There were a lot of similar things happening there that just looked rough. And so that was frustrating to see. The zone entries weren't good, sloppy turnovers, defensive breakdowns. I mean, shoot, one of the goals that they scored was screened by Matt Duchene, who usually doesn't have that issue, but was just bad in a bad place in a bad spot and did not make a move defensively. But you can almost tell when they're about to score a goal. Oh. Is my sound coming through all right?
Yeah, your sound's fine.
Is it me?
I think we're good.
No, I can hear everybody.
All right. So it was frustrating to see because you can almost tell when they're about to score a goal because they just would get these sustained chances. And for a team that has looked so good poke checking and disrupting offenses, we did not look like that on Wednesday night. It was brutal. It was tough to watch. And honestly, you know, there was some bad defense, but there were also a couple goals, well, two out of the three, not counting the empty netter, where I thought UC could have probably made that. I think UC was kind of due for a little bit of not a full on regression, but just a rough game. And it was a rough game for UC as well.
Yep. I would agree. What Chad said in the beginning about the bad passing, couldn't get the puck in the neutral zone. Their one power play opportunity they had, they couldn't get set up at all. It was just horrible. And I hate to say this, but, you know, we had all these players coming off of injury, and I think it might have messed up the flow of the team a little bit.
I don't disagree with you on that, especially, yeah. I mean, I don't know. I'm not sure Brad Richardson's it. I kind of wish Rocco was in the lineup somewhere, especially because he's healthy right now. Well, he's not.
You got Dante Fabbro back into the mix on Wednesday, which is nice to have him back. But
no Arvidsson.
Yeah, that was one of those things. It just felt like
they were off all night. And there's only one thing you can point to, and it's definitely that, you know, the lines are mixed up a little bit now with these injured players coming back. So
there was no flow. That was kind of the word I keep coming back to is flow. There was no flow to it. It was like you would think they're like coming up and they're going to make something happen. And every time they try to get in the zone, they would just give the puck away. That's kind of how I saw it. It was a hard game to watch. There was no flow to it whatsoever, other than Cali Yarncroke's sick goal. That goal was pretty sweet. But that again, was awesome. that was one of those broken down plays, like where he just got loose and he finished it. it really didn't. It, that goal didn't come from the Preds cycling through, setting things up. It was just Columbus was doing the same thing. They weren't smoothing their play as well. It was just two teams that were giving the puck away left and right, and neither team could really manufacture a lot of sustained pressure. And Columbus ended up with the win, and it's a missed opportunity. It really is, because now the Preds are really putting themselves in a tough situation, because although the math seems like it's favoring the Preds, and it is, the odds still favor the Preds, it looks dicey, because it really settles on the Friday night game, Dallas Stars, Tampa Bay Lightning. What happens in that game? We're all going to be sweating bullets big time going into Saturday against the Carolina Hurricanes if the Stars figure out a way to beat the Tampa Bay Lightning on Friday. We're going to be sweating bullets here. I can promise you that. I'm already sweating bullets about it. Not even happened yet.
Well, I mean, and part of it is that, you know, it's not really like we could have taken this into our own hands, but now it's going to either take a little bit of help or it's going to take us beating the Carolina Hurricanes, who we've yet to beat. Surely we don't want to get, you know, a season sweep. So if we can just get, you know, 2 points against the Hurricanes somehow, I don't care if it comes in a shootout, just do something. That'd be nice. But I mean, it's tough knowing that we've yet to beat them. I mean, and that's going to be our first round opponent too. So, you know, what can we do for our confidence if we can get in, if we can get, you know, something going against them? But it's also going to take speed. I think that's why, for me, like, I think you bring Rocco back. I think, you know, against Brad Richardson, with Brad Richardson, you know, he's a tough player. I'll give him that. But we need speed, and that's what Rocco does in spades. And there's some other guys that can pick up his kind of defensive lapses here and there, depending on the line you put it on. But, no, I mean, it stinks, because if the Tampa Bay Lightning can't get it done, then we got to rely on the Blackhawks. And it's like a question of, okay, who do the Blackhawks hate more, the Stars or us? Are they going to help us out, or are they going to – you know, maybe give some young guys some extra starting time.
I'd like to think that they would want to win. But, yeah. You know, like you say, though, you just don't know.
Yeah.
Now we've put ourselves in the situation where we have to scoreboard watch more, which drives you crazy. And then also, you've got to figure out your kryptonite this whole season. You got to figure out the team that you can't figure out. And you know, the Preds have been outscored 23-9 against the Hurricanes this season. I mean, most of the games have been pretty hard to watch. They've had a couple close calls where they battled with them. But the Hurricanes are one of those teams where they are the front runners, arguably in the entire NHL. I would argue that. And they're going to be very tough for the Preds. But here's another thing. The Preds can also get in. Here's a scenario we don't want to really see happen, but it could still happen. Preds get two overtime losses, they can get in. They can also get in if the Stars – if they can just get one overtime loss, then the Stars have to go 3-0-0 to move past us. Because we have the tiebreaker no matter what if we tie with them. We have the wins in regulation – and we have the wins and overtime wins over them, which are your first two tiebreakers. So we don't have to worry about a tiebreaker scenario with them. We got the tiebreaker. We have to worry about the Stars actually leapfrogging us. And it could still happen. That's what makes this thing so complicated now.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, and to answer, because Mike Twitter and then Landry Agnes are on the comments here.
What's up, guys? How you doing?
As far as the Tampa Bay Lightning go, I think they didn't only Dallas because they played them last year in the Cup. I think that's kind of a rivalry that's been created because those teams are still very familiar with one another and they still want to beat one another. I feel like Tampa Bay kind of wants to knock them out again, just for saying they were able to knock them out again. But I mean, there's plenty on the line for Tampa Bay too. I mean, they want to be in that second spot if possible, get home field or not home field, but a home ice advantage. So I mean, there's incentive for Tampa Bay. For Chicago, you know, there's incentive because they're competitors, they're NHL players, but, you know, they're already out too. So it's one of those things where, and can Dallas, you know, can Dallas beat them or can they beat Dallas? I think Chicago's shown flashes. I mean, they've beaten Dallas before this season, so it's not out of the realm of possibility. It's definitely, the math is in our favor, but it's just tough to, because
but I do not feel good about, if we haven't clinched after Friday, after Friday's result between Stars and Lightning, if we haven't clinched yet, I'm going to be losing my my crap. I'm not gonna drop the S word here because we have family watching tonight. We're respectful there, but that's what I'm gonna be losing.
Yeah.
Because I can tell you that I don't like our chances of us having to play Carolina twice and the Stars get Chicago Blackhawks team that's pretty much, even though they're hockey players and they're competitive, and that's true. I don't like that scenario at all. So
I do like Carolina and Bridgetown. Carolina will be in Bridgetown. Yeah. That's good. That's one good
that
thing is, about
that,
it.
That helps. And the crowd has really been rising to the occasion. Yeah. I've been hearing.
Yes.
I mean, even with limited capacity, the Bridgestone Arena crowd is still rising up and making it loud and making it a tough place to play. So
the Dallas game, Colin went to that and watching it on TV, it sounded like it was full place. So
I mean, it was 33%, awesome. And it still felt like the energy was there. Like it was crazy, especially after the overtime win. Like just the way that building erupted with just 33% capacity, mm-hmm. I was thinking like, man, this is full. Like the roof would have flown off this place. Like having that many fans definitely makes a difference. But I mean, it's gonna be helpful for us, but at the same time, we gotta play our version of hockey too. Like we can't get back into these old habits that we've been falling back into. So it's gonna be a matter of how bad do they want it. I think they want it, but you know, they've gotta show it. So the good news is, I will say, for Dallas and Chicago, Chicago actually leads that series 4-2. So they've beaten Dallas, and they did that. They actually got two of those wins early on when Dallas was relatively healthy. So there's some optimism there if it falls back there. It would just be nice if we could just take it into our own hands, not up to scoreboard watch. And honestly, another thing is kind of jumping off the thought that, you know, Chad had last episode is like, where do you put Pecorino if you want to give him one last start in Bridgestone, and theoretically this might be it for him. And we can't do that unless we have some confidence that we're done. So, you know, that's one thing. My question, I guess, jumping off of that is, so let's say Friday, Tampa Bay wins, we're in, all is well. And let's say we give Pekka the series. We say Pekka start the series, and he does well, and we get two wins against Carolina. Do you go into the playoffs against Carolina with Pekka starting?
No. And I'm the world's biggest Pecorino fan, and I'm saying no, 100%.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
That's hard for me to say. No. Yeah. But I've been thinking about that too. Do you give Pecorino the series? I don't think so. I don't think Saros needs that long of a rest.
No.
That could almost work against you if Saros gets too long of a rest. And so I'm thinking ideally, I would love if we have it clinched either Friday or Saturday by winning on Saturday. Either way, if the Preds can clinch by Saturday, after Saturday's game, then the perfect scenario is Pecorino starts the season finale. There's nothing on the line. Let him go out with a standing ovation. Hopefully he gets a good performance in front of him. He gets the win. And then we see what happens in the offseason, and hopefully we can bring him back. That's a perfect scenario for me. But if, let's say, the Preds have it already clinched going into Saturday night's game, I still think that in that scenario, I would start Pecorino on Saturday and then still give Saros the season finale, because I don't want Saros to get too much of a rest and then he comes into game one rusty, which could happen too. So
because we don't know if they do make it in, we don't even know when the playoffs will start because that hasn't been announced. We don't even know. So.
Yeah,
yeah.
That would be a long rest, like you said.
It's supposed to be the 11th. Now it's gonna be later because they extended the season to basically May 19th. So, realistically, and some playoff games might actually start before regular season games end, just because they're trying to keep things flowing with COVID and all that stuff.
Yeah. You still have Vancouver. The Vancouver Canucks are the team that's really behind right now.
Yeah,
if you look at the standings. They've only played. Vancouver's only played
47
games. They still got 9 games to play. So, and they're technically not eliminated yet. They're basically eliminated, but mathematically they're not yet. So, you got to let them play out their games for sure. So, another thing I really want to get into from the game, though, even though it was a snoozer and it was hard to watch, how about the fourth line and how about Tanner Janot?
Well, that's the thing.
This guy just keeps cooking. This guy just keeps making things happen. It's not just him, it's that entire line. But Tanner Jeannot, man, this guy has been – we've discovered a player that we didn't know a lot about, and there's a lot we can take from this season, even if we don't make the playoffs, based on what we've seen from the youth of this roster. And Tanner Jeannot has kind of taken that charge and been – even he's up there close with Elie Tolvanen. Obviously, Elie Tolvanen's leading that way as far as the youth, but Tanner Jeannot is turned into a rocket. This guy makes things happen. He scored the first goal against Columbus, and we were feeling good about it then. But you just love everything you've seen about him.
Yeah, he's making a case to stay on the roster too. So that's awesome.
Oh, I think he definitely should at this point, because he's leading the team in points since a certain date. So I mean, that in and of itself is like, I mean, that should be enough reason. But really, that line is a microcosm of just what this Preds' success has been predicated on. Like, without the young guys, the Preds have not been successful. And I honestly, like, that's why I kind of question bringing some of these guys. I mean, obviously, like, you got to bring your Forsbergs back. You got to bring your Duchesnes, your Duchesnes back. But, you know, Richardson, I know he brings some things in there. Gabranson, also know he brings some things in there. But the youth just have this mentality. When you talk about, you know, team vibing, like, the vibe comes because these guys are hungry. I mean, they just look hungrier. They look, you know, more energetic and more enthusiastic. Not to say the other guys aren't, but it's just there's something about this youth that they just come into it and they set the pace and they set the tone for everybody else. And so, you know, when you look at that fourth line, like, that's a tone setter for the whole team, because they're physical and they're fast and they don't let up on plays. I mean, that Tanner Jeannot goal, he had to skate all the way from behind the net and mm-hmm. he put it in himself mm-hmm. and he basically got his own rebound. And that was just like that sort of tenacity that you need. Like, you got to be able to put those second chance opportunities in the net, and he did that. But I mean, he, along with Jakob Trenin, who's been playing really well, Colton Sissons has kind of had a resurgence, being able to center those two guys. Like, that's what we need to see, is more of that energy and that enthusiasm throughout the entire roster.
I agree totally. Let me share real quick, Rich, before you go. Kyle Perkins, who's a host of Renegades of Puck on Nashville Sports Radio locally here. We had a really good conversation right before we went live, basically talking about how, yeah, it's great to see this youth play the way that it is, and it's great to see the fourth line, the herd line, everyone loves it, but this is kind of a bad – you can't count on your fourth line carrying you, especially against teams like the Hurricanes. So we really need the rest of this roster to wake up and – give some goal support to UC Saros for one, but just, you know, like, when the only spark you're seeing is from your fourth line, which is what mm-hmm. I kind of saw against Columbus on Wednesday night, that's a major problem. That's a major problem.
When you look at the stat sheet and, like, Forsberg, nothing. Tolvanen, nothing. You know, Johansson, nothing. Duchesne, nothing. They just, you know, those are the guys that have to step up, like you said.
I should say Forsberg's got 2 points, but then Tolvanen has that one goal, and that's really it for him. I mean, the power play has not gotten back to where it was, and honestly, like, that top unit is not getting the time that they probably need. And really, Tolvanen has like one chance, and then if it doesn't work out, they pull it out and put the second unit out there. And I'm like, why? I mean, he's getting the shooting lanes, like, for whatever reason, I don't get it. Yeah. Teams have given him like that circle; they let him shoot from that circle, and they still have like they haven't put a blocker in front of him or anything. So I'm like, why are we not leaving him out for just a little bit longer? Give him one more chance, and if it doesn't go in, then you put the second unit out there. But giving him one chance to shoot it and then say, okay, we're going to switch it up, it just doesn't mm-hmm. work. But yeah, I mean, Forsberg could put the team on his back if he wanted to. You know, now Fabro's back, like, I'd love to see him, you know, contribute some offensively. That was one thing I noticed last night, is our defense wasn't getting on the forecheck, and it definitely mm-hmm. showed in terms of, that's why we couldn't produce. We couldn't get sustained opportunities, because instead we're seeing these opportunities be squandered by poor offensive transitions where things get immediately poke checked. And we need to see more than just that. So, you know, it would be nice to see all these guys that came back from injury really contribute the way they were before they got injured. And also, like I said, I've been critical of Rocco this season, but I'd still take Rocco over Brad Richardson right now, just because of how he's been playing as of late and what he brings to the team.
Right.
I mean, that's a good point to bring up about swapping out Brad Richardson for Grimaldi. I don't see it happening. I don't see Hines doing that this late in the season. I think he's kind of stuck in his ways. But yeah, I don't think you're necessarily wrong in bringing that up either. Another thing, so Yarncroke got that sweet goal to make it 2-1 Preds. It was a sweet goal. He broke away and just put it right, top shelf. Gorgeous goal. Nice. So he's tied for the team leading goals now with 13. That was pretty, but it pretty much ended after that. That was
30 seconds later.
Kind of makes you wonder if the Preds were scoreboard watching like the rest of us were, because it wasn't a good effort after that.
Well, no, that's what I was saying. Like the bad habits. Like I can't tell you how many times have we seen like it's the last minute or maybe like minute 30 seconds of the period, and the Preds just like mentally collapse. Like they just let it go. Like okay, we're gonna go into intermission, and they score. Like that was one of those things where we kind of eliminated that since March 16th. Like we have not really fallen back into that habit. And when I saw that last night, I was like, oh no, like that can't be something we get back into, because we've done so well with trying to finish out periods and finish them strong, and so. Yeah, that was just so frustrating to see that happen.
So in the beginning of the season, we used two words a lot in our articles and on the podcast. It was grit and intensity. And we said they need to find the grit and the intensity. Well, then they found it, and we said they've got the grit and the intensity. Well, then now on Wednesday night, they definitely did not have that, and they just, like we said, look flat. And it's just like you got to get that intensity back. You're just getting pushed, not pushed around, but just, you're just not playing well. I don't know.
I think it's the opponent's psychology too. Like I think that with Dallas, like when they went into Dallas, that was like a playoff game if there ever was one. And the intensity was there. Like, yes, it was a high scoring match, but man, like there were some punches traded. There was some intensity, some grit to that game. Yeah. The first Columbus game, I got Tom Wilson already on my mind. But the first Columbus game, though, it was just one of those things where it was like we coasted. We got that big lead, and then we gave it up, and it's like we had to take overtime just to do it. Like we expected to win. And then last night it felt more of the same of like we expect to beat these guys, and we coasted. So hopefully with Carolina coming up, maybe that intensity level gets up, maybe that grit comes back, and we say, listen, we got to take this into our own hands.
Absolutely. They really got to get some adjustments here, and they got to. I mean, we'll have to wait and see what happens Friday with the Lightning. But even Lightning and the Stars. But even if the Preds are already clinched, I still want to see them play with a different intensity. I don't even care if the playoffs are clinched. They need to show us something here. They need to make a statement here. So that's where we're at here. Let's get into the next segment of episode 42 of the Catfish and Ice podcast. Presented by DraftKings. Go get the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use our promo code THPN to bet $1 to win $55 on the main event of this weekend's boxing match. Just pick the just bet on the main event. You can win $55 on a simple $1 bet. So let's go ahead and get into the next segment, and that is what's really gripping the NHL world, not for the right reasons. This isn't something like great that's going on here that everyone wants to be necessarily talking about, but it's happening and we have to address it. We can't overlook it. Let's go ahead and get into the just kind of the meat of what's going on here. And that is, we all know, we've all seen it. Tom Wilson, repeat offender. We feel like this happens all the time. Got into another scrum between, it was the New York Rangers, Washington Capitals on Monday. And a scrum happens, scrums happen all the time in the NHL. That's part of it. No one's mad about that. But what happens towards the end of the scrum, Tom Wilson throws Panarin down to the ice, starts slamming his head, gets really ugly, gets really nasty. And then that's when the NHL player safety gets involved and gives him a $5,000 fine, which is the maximum allowed under the CBA. So we'll deal with that later. That's something that's also ridiculous. But the fact that there was no suspension is why everyone is up in arms, and rightfully so, because then Wednesday's game, we all knew it was coming. Both teams dropped their gloves right at the face-off, and it's just a horrible look for the league. Because that fighting happens in hockey, and we get that. No one's trying to say get rid of fighting when it happens. But in that regard, that's a bad look, because so, it looked like WWE.
Well, and there's a lot of context here too. So we've seen some people have made the argument that Tom Wilson was retaliating because Panarin jumped on his back. But Panarin jumped on his back because Tom Wilson was cross-checking one of his teammates while he was down on the ice in the back. And so that's why Panarin jumped on him, to get him off of his guy. And so then the fight breaks out. Panarin has his helmet off. He gets pulled down by the hair while being tripped on the leg, and then gets pulled down to the ice where that's a huge concussion issue potentially, but Panarin's now out because of the injury sustained from that fight for the season. And granted, the Rangers were eliminated, but at the same time, that's a player that's out, that's not playing games because of someone that's injuring. Fights, they happen, but they don't injure players or necessarily knock them out for the rest of the season like that one does. And honestly, like that one, on top of everything else that's been happening, like it's a recipe for disaster. What do you expect is going to happen when you find a guy for $5,000? And I get that is the NHLPA minimum. Like that's got to be renegotiated in the next CBA. But it's not suspending for any games. They could have avoided this if they just suspended him for the next game or next two games. Dante Fabbro got 2 games for much less. I mean, come on. Like, do you remember when Dante Fabbro got suspended for 2 games?
Yep.
He didn't knock someone out. He didn't put someone, you know, he didn't injure someone so much that they'd have to miss time. Like, that's just ridiculous to me. But no, I mean, it's a matter of the NHL asked for this. Like, what did the NHL think they were going to get when they said, here's a $5,000 fine for a guy that makes that in, like, you know, a minute maybe of ice time? Like, that's ridiculous. And then, to be so, you know, I'm going to go on my conspiracy hat, you know, now, but come on. Like, I've got the graphic posted here, and you can show it to everybody if you want to, but to take him out of the game and say he's got an upper body injury, which really just means he doesn't have a brain. That's what my belief is. But the upper body injury, like, I think Toronto called and said, get Tom Wilson out of the game, or this is going to get uglier and uglier. And then beyond that, the $250,000 fine for the Rangers, that's such crap. I mean, that is such, like, are we not going to look at what the Capitals did too? I mean, they played a role in that as well. It's just ridiculous, but that's my thoughts on it. Yeah, Tom Wilson is out for upper body. Sure he is, Capitals PR. Sure he is. I believe that. Yeah, okay. That's how I feel about it.
What about you, Rich? Go ahead.
Well, I've got a little bit more unpopular opinion of the whole thing. Let me just preface what I'm about to say with the NHL rules are ridiculous. They're not consistent. There's the rules, and then there's the unwritten rules, and then you have the code by the players, and the fines and the penalties don't make any sense. That's one thing. Number two, I'm not defending Tom Wilson in the least. That dude is a crazy man. He has a long history.
He's got some anger. It seems like this guy has some anger problems.
He's mad. He's got a long list of suspensions. But when you look at – I watched some videos today of some bench-clearing brawls, and there's a lot of really, really bad things that happen in those. And I think they're using the instance of when it's a brawl like that, lots of things happen and can happen. And I think that's why they didn't suspend him, because, like, Panarin, he did get injured, but he did walk away, which is, thank goodness, because he really hit his head really hard. And I just think, like, when you insert yourself into that situation, no matter who you are, no matter how big you are, you have to expect that you could possibly get hurt. It was bad of Tom Wilson the way he handled it, but you also have to think it's heat of the moment. He's got 3 other dudes trying to beat him up.
Well, I think
he definitely deserved something because of the cheap shot that he gave Buchnevich, and he was taken up for his teammate, and Panarin has every right to take up for his teammate and try to stop it. But you just, I can't see why, you know,
like, I think
you see what I'm saying, though?
I totally see what you're saying, Rich. Here's another reason why a lot of people are ticked off right now is, I mean, it's not like Tom Wilson. Let's forget that he's even a one-time repeat offender. This guy,
multiple every year.
I've actually got his fine and suspension history written down on my notes tonight. And my wrist, I'm not exaggerating,
it's pretty long,
was hurting after I wrote down all these suspensions. And let me give credit to Bleacher Report for where I got this. Actually, no, this was from Yahoo. From James O'Brien of Yahoo was actually who shared the timeline of all of his suspensions dating back to September of 2017. And I mean, I can go on and on, but like this guy is a repeat offender, a multi-repeat. I mean, I'm not talking just a couple times. Like, so that also is what really makes this look bad. If it was one of those instances where it was a guy who, you know, hasn't been around that much, it happened, it was in the heat of the moment type of thing, like you're saying, Rich, then I'd be like, okay, it's a brutal sport. It can be barbaric. It can be rough. We'll give him the benefit of the doubt that he was angry, that this player was heated, whatever. It's part of it. And most of your hockey players know what they're signing up for. But Tom Wilson is not going to get the benefit of the doubt from me whatsoever. This guy this guy clearly likes to play this way. And so I think the NHL really missed out on an opportunity to send a message of, okay, this kind of stuff's not going to be tolerated. Yeah. Like fighting, heavy checking, we don't want the physicality of the sport to leave, but that kind of stuff has no room for it. And so I think that's where people really break off and they're ticked off.
Well, and he was celebrating in the box afterwards too, which just makes him a bigger douchebag.
And I agree with everything y'all are saying, but it's just, I can see why they didn't suspend him, because I've seen brawls where guys have gotten hurt a lot worse than that. And it's and they're using that as a precedent to not suspend him this time. He's probably going to get suspended down the road, and you know it's going to happen. You know it's going to happen because he's of the way he plays, unless he changes his how he plays. But it's just it's bad because like if you look at like everybody talking about it, so people are saying he tried to commit murder and assault, and like you look at all that garbage, and it's like, you know, New York's mad because Panarin's out. He did get hurt. Just I don't know. It's bad all around. It's just bad all around.
Well, I mean, part of it's that, you know, I'm not even like, I'm in that place of like, if they wanted to find Panarin too, fine. Like, find Panarin. I mean, really, it was the cross check to what's his name? Oh my gosh,
Buchnevich.
Yeah, Buchnevich, his neck. I mean, that was especially the neck area. Like, that's just incredibly dangerous. Yep. But I mean, the thing is, like, if you want to fine both players for fighting, sure. The fine that he got was for the cross check, which is good, but the fine is, like I said, it's $5,000. Mm-hmm. Like, that doesn't mean anything. The only way the NHL can fine more than $5,000 is by taking away someone's game check. And the only way you do that is you suspend for a game. I mean, it's already a heftier fine. It's a heftier fine than, and that's the whole reason that they justified it, is that if we have to find anything over $5,000, then we're going to suspend for a game to take away a game check. Well, they didn't do that. And if there's ever been an instance where that should have happened, it's just not only that, I mean, even for, I'm going to play devil's advocate, literally the devil here, but like for Tom Wilson's safety, like Tom Wilson they could have been headhunting last night's game. Good thing he had another body.
Let's get into that. Let's get into the ramifications of what happened. And this is where we're kind of talking about, like, yes, a suspension should have been handed out, because where it really got dicey, and we all saw it coming, no one was surprised by this. Wednesday night's game, Capitals, Rangers. Rangers even issued a very big statement.
Puck drop.
For the game. I've never seen a team statement like this released. And it was just, I mean, I'll read it real quick just because I feel like for people who haven't heard it, they need to hear it. But the official New York Rangers statement came out and said, the New York Rangers are extremely disappointed that the Capitals forward Tom Wilson was not suspended for his horrifying act of violence last night at Madison Square Garden. Wilson is a repeat offender with a long history of these types of acts, and we find it shocking that the NHL and their Department of Player Safety failed to take the appropriate action and suspend him indefinitely. Wilson's dangerous and reckless actions caused an injury to Artemi Panarin that will prevent him from playing again this season. We view this as a dereliction of duty by NHL head player of safety George Parros, and believe he is unfit to continue in his current role. Now, let me say this. The Rangers ended up getting fined $250,000 earlier today for this statement. I feel like if they took out that last sentence, unfit for his current role,
yeah,
then I don't think they get fined. They get fined a much smaller fine. But they this team went off from the top rope. I'm not blaming them for that.
I'm not saying it's wrong either. Like, I mean, let's be
honest.
They went
off, but that's the biggest team statement I've ever seen.
Oh yeah.
Maybe someone can share some examples that they've seen in the past where a team blasted the league like that in an official statement in any sport. Please tell me. I would love to see it. That was crazy to me.
Especially an individual. That
last sentence is a mic drop. Unfit to continue his current role. So Gary Bettman came out today and said, "We're not going to deal with those comments, and we're going to fine you $250,000." Which, I mean, come on now.
Gary Bettman's there's a reason that Gary Bettman's was hate commissioner in major sports, though. I honestly, and that's saying something, because Goodell is a pretty hated individual, mm-hmm. but Gary Bettman has been booed longer than Goodell's been even in the job. So
let me just read Bettman's what he had to say about it. Quote, he said, public comments of the nature issued by the Rangers that were personal in nature and demeaning of a league executive will not be tolerated. While we don't expect our clubs to agree with every decision rendered by the Department of Player Safety, the extent to which the Rangers expressed their disagreement was unacceptable. It is terribly unfair to question George Parros' professionalism and dedication to his role in the Department of Player Safety, end quote. This is not going to end anytime soon. This is going to be a stain for a while.
Well, here's the thing. The Rangers are going to appeal it, and if they lose on appeal, they're going to take it to court, because that's a quarter of $1 million. Are you kidding me? Like, are you kidding? For that kind of I get that this is it's a pretty big call out, but at the same time, like, here's the thing about leadership. You're in an executive position. You make that decision. You make that call. Like, your name is on it. So whether you like it or not, like, your name is on it. When people are frustrated, your name is going to be associated with that decision. And if you can't handle that, if you are so petty to think that you need to be protected behind the shield of the league for, you know, someone saying some mean things about you, being critical of your poor performance, because let's be honest, that was a poor choice. Like, the fact that Dante Fabre got 2 games for leaving his feet and Tom Olsen gets nothing. Like, are you? And Dante Fabre is a number three defender. Like,
That's what Rich was saying. There's no consistency here. It's like, what are you doing, NHL? Like, what are you doing right now? At the very least, you could have avoided this by suspending Wilson 1 game, 2 games, and there still would have been people that would have been like, seriously, you're only going to spend this guy 1 or 2 games after his history. But at the same time, you could have avoided this mess by at least suspending the guy 1 or 2 games, which we all agree he deserves. I don't know if Rich agrees on that, but
I mean, within the framework of the NHL's jacked up rules, I mean, he's got a there's a precedence for him to not get suspended. That's all.
Being a repeat offender since 2017 also should play into this.
If you look at like Matthias Ekholm, let's say Matthias Ekholm does something and somebody jumps on his back and he does the exact same thing, we'd all sit here and we'd go, man, that's really not like him. We said it about Dante Fabre. We were like, he didn't mean to. It's not like him. But because it's Tom Wilson, everybody hates him.
To use your scenario of Ekholm, let's say Ekholm does this, and Ekholm gets crazy too. Ekholm is a player who plays pissed off, and let's say he did it. I would definitely be like, dude, that's not a good look. Like, you got angry, you got upset in the moment. If the NHL comes out and suspends him 2 games, I'm totally being like, all right, that's understood.
I mean, look at the Fabro case. Even when Fabro left his feet and got suspended for 2 games, we're like, you know what? He left his feet. And we understood that. Like, we were reasonably like, okay, that's reasonable. But the thing is, like, the fine and the actual, like, punishment for what he received was not for what happened against Panarin. I mean, that was pretty ugly. Let's not get it twisted. Like, that was – he threw him around like a rag doll.
Oh, yeah,
but
it was ugly.
The punishment was for what happened with Buchnevich, which was justified. But honestly, that – felt like that issue alone should have been the reason for a multiple game suspension. I mean, the Panarin one, listen, two guys fighting happens all the time in the NHL.
A scrum. Basically a scrum.
Yeah. The cross check to the back of someone's neck while they're on the ice. That's the multi-game suspension reasoning. I'm not saying that he deserves a fine or even a suspension necessarily for Panarin. It was ugly. Should he have just, you know, Tom Wilson is incapable of stepping away from that situation. I get it. The Buchnevich part was the one that got me. I mean, and like I said, like we've said, the NHL could have avoided all of this if they had just done even a single game suspension. It probably wouldn't have been enough. Because to me, that looks like Dante Fabbri gets two games for leaving his feet as a first time offender. Mm-hmm. And what didn't look really like he was trying to inflict harm on the guy.
Yeah.
Then this deserves at minimum two games. There's no way.
Exactly. I'm right there.
That's why they need to change the rules. They need to do something to
kind of stuff. I think this is going to be a very big topic of discussion over the offseason. I think the NHL realizes that they have a pretty big problem they need to figure out. Now, the NHL is really good at not fixing anything, so we'll see if they actually do something about it. But I think they do realize right now they have a pretty big problem on their hands that they better figure out. But
Colin's point, go ahead.
Real fast, to Colin's point, it's dangerous for everybody involved. Like you said, even for Tom Wilson. He could have seriously got hurt last night, and people probably would say, oh, that's deserved, but it's not.
Let's talk about this quote that I pulled from a Bleacher Report article from Tyler Conway, who writes for Bleacher Report. This is he quoted New York Rangers defenseman Brandon Smith, who said, quote, "I had no beef with anybody else on their team. I thought it should have been handled before this game, and it wasn't. Unfortunately, it had to be on my shoulders, and I thought I took it." So that's basically just a player saying, hey, look, we knew what was going to happen. This is what we had to do. It's part of it. And the NHL let it happen. Yeah. And for some people, they loved it. For some people, they were like, man, this is awesome. Can I get this every night? Pure hockey fans don't want to see that mess.
We don't want to see that.
We don't.
No.
And Smith, Smith took it all right. He took Wilson pretty much mauled him in that fight, but anyway,
Strome get on the action. But I mean, the thing is, like, that's what frustrates me is that the 141 penalty minutes. I mean, I'm glad I haven't seen anything as a result of that. Because what do you expect is going to happen? Like,
let's talk about this.
You have to take it into your hands. Like,
yeah.
So Tom Wilson's already been suspended this current season for 7 games for a hit on Brandon Carlo of the Boston Bruins. So it's like, this guy just doesn't learn. So I get what you're saying, Rich, about, but you can't give this guy the benefit of the doubt anymore. He wasted that a long time ago.
Yeah, and I agree. And had he, like, if it was a different scenario and he, like, purposely went and found Artemi Panarin and, like, did that and not in a scrum, I would say kick him out of the league. Totally.
Yeah.
But he inserted himself into the situation, and you don't go poke a bear when they're mauling somebody else. It's just a bad all the way around. And then we haven't even talked about Buchnevich getting suspended when he got suspended, cross-checked Mantha in the neck with the stick. So,
exactly. You know, that's
kind of an eye-for-eye situation. The thing is, like, that cross-check looked very similar to what was happening to him and why he was so pissed off. But, like, the whole $250,000 fine thing, like, that looks to me like – there's the metaphor. It's not a great metaphor, but like the metaphor of like new money versus old money. Like, that's a new money move. Like, they're fine $250,000, $250,000. Like, do you really want to get sued for damages, NHL? Because I mean, honestly, there's no, if the Rangers don't win that on appeal, they're going to take it to the court system. The court system, like, you just got these huge lucrative contracts with ESPN and Turner. The last thing you need is this stupid kind of controversy where you're finding an obscene amount. And I get it. It's the Rangers, and the Knicks are doing well this season, so maybe the Rangers have a little bit more money because the Knicks kind of have been subsidizing them a bit.
Yeah.
But, I mean, come on. $250,000, $250,000 because they hurt your feelings, because they said that you were bad at your job because you are. Come on.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I agree. So, just as long as you guys don't think I'm – sticking up for Tom Wilson.
You're good. You're good.
I don't want anybody like coming on Twitter and flaming me or anything and saying how dare you.
I think you make a good point. I mean, I think you got to look at it from multiple different angles because that's how this story is. This story can be looked at from many different angles. And, I mean, your perspective is not wrong. I think where I break away from you is if Tom Wilson didn't have the history that he has, I would be able to kind of like see what you're saying. But at the same time, with his history, I can't give the guy any benefit of the doubt. So we could go on for another hour about this. We're going to go ahead and move on to the next segment. This is a Catfish on Ice podcast, episode 42, presented by DraftKings and part of the Hockey Podcast Network. Go follow us on Twitter, on Instagram, and on Facebook at Catfish Ice. This is Chad Mitten and Rich Howe and Colin Blue and your host. And let's get into our final segment. And that is, we're going to look back at the 2016 and 17 Nashville Predators team that really wasn't that long ago. Feels like it wasn't that long ago, that's for sure, who shocked everybody. They also had to sneak into the playoffs late in the season. They lost 5 of their last 7 games that season, actually. So you want to talk about a team that was backing into the playoffs and didn't have a lot going for them. Not a lot of excitement, not a lot of buzz. I remember, like it was yesterday, that team, there was no Stanley Cup aspirations around this team when they were going into the playoffs to face the Chicago Blackhawks as the 8th seed. I was hoping they didn't get swept. And then, ironically enough, they were the ones that did the sweeping. So it's natural to kind of think back to that team and then look at this current team and think, should we feel the same way? Not that these two teams are the same team, because they're not, but is it fair to think, okay, why can't this team, Preds team, do the same thing? Why can't they go and sweep Carolina? Why can't they make a magical Stanley Cup run? That's the point of this comparison. That's the point of the article I wrote for Predlines.com and that you can go check out. And that's the point of this segment. And so let me just start off by saying this. Also, that 2016-17 team was definitely better on paper. I will go ahead and give you that 100%. That team had Mike Fisher. It had James Neal. It had Craig Smith. It had PK Subban. It had Pecorine, who still hadn't won his first Vezina trophy yet.
Cody McLeod.
But there's still Cody McLeod. Oh, you got to talk about some Cody McLeod up in here. Hell yeah. Hell yeah. I love it. But that team had a lot of good players, a lot of good veterans. But it also had a lot of the same players that are still on this current team. Victor Arvidsson, Ryan Johansson, Philip Forsberg, Roman Josi, Matthias Ekholm, Colton Sissons. Ryan Ellis. I mean, Cal Yarncroak. So there's still a lot of the same players. Now, I want to compare some stats here. 2016, the team leader in goals was Victor Arvidsson and Philip Forsberg. They each had 31 goals. Points was a tie with Ryan Johansson and Victor Arvidsson with 61 points. Assist, Ryan Johansson led the team with 47. Roman Josi led the team on time on ice with over 25 minutes a game. Hits was Mike Fisher with 160. Penalty minutes was Austin Watson. No shocker there. Let's look at this current team. Goal production's way down with this team. Even when you go off an 82-game pace, the goal production is down. But it's tied right now between Mikael Granlund and Cal Yarncroak with 13 goals apiece. Points, you got Roman Josi with 33. Assists, you got Roman Josi with 25. Josi still leads the team in average time on ice. You got the Yak attack. Yakov Trenin leading the team in hits with 89. Even though Matthew Olivier's been out for a while, he leads the team in penalty minutes with 68. And so I think the biggest comparison I can make between these two teams is you've got two teams that play with an edge, that play with a blue-collar mentality, play with a chip on their shoulder, and you've also got two teams – that have a hot goaltender that can carry you, that's capable of carrying you. Pecorine was that way in 2016-17, and now we've got UC Saros. Other than that, the Preds got a lot of holes this year compared to that 2016-17 team. The Stanley Cup team was way better on special teams than this current team, And that's the part that really sticks out to me, where it's hard to compare the two and hope for a deep playoff run. What do you, Rich, kind of what do you, how do you feel? Do you feel like all hope's lost once we get in, it's over, we're going to get swept no matter what, or we're going to lose in five games, maybe we get one win? How are you feeling, or do you have some optimism here?
There's always a little bit of hope. You got to always keep that little bit of hope. On paper, it looks like they're going to get murdered, but you just never know. You just never know what's going to happen, like you said.
And I will
I wasn't watching Nashville back in 2016-17, but like when you look at the stats and stuff, they swept Chicago. I mean, nobody thought they were going to do that.
And I'm sure Colin can put some perspective, his own perspective on this. But I can say that going into that series with Chicago, I was feeling very similar to how I feel right now. Mm-hmm. If the Predators are able to face the Hurricanes in the first round, the feelings are going to be very, very similar. So in
let me ask you this. If you compare that Chicago team with this Carolina Hurricanes team, how do those two match up?
I mean, it's subjective. I mean, I feel like it depends on who you ask there. It's hard to compare the two teams. I will say that Blackhawks team was right at the end of their peak. That was kind of like their last hoorah with each other. They had a ton of veterans. They still had Patrick Kane, obviously, but they had a ton of veterans on that team. A lot of people would argue that the Blackhawks rode that roster for too long. That roster that kind of made them a little bit of a dynasty, and they should have gone into the rebuild sooner. Mm-hmm. And the Preds pretty much put that nail in the coffin to send them into the rebuild that they're still kind of recovering from now.
Yep.
Yeah.
But going into that playoff series, I remember looking at that Blackhawks team thinking, we're not going to win this series. We'll be lucky to win a game. And then Victor Arvidsson scored the first goal in game one, right when the game started. And I remember the sports bar I was at, all these Preds fans were like, okay, we're up. We're up 1-0 in game one, first period. But there wasn't a lot of confidence that we were going to be able to beat the Blackhawks. There wasn't.
So back then, I have to ask you real quick, did you, either one of you, have a Cody Bass jersey?
No, sir. Can't say
I don't even know.
I remember the name.
He played 9 games that season. Anyway, go ahead.
Okay.
Well, I was going to say, the only time – I mean,
hey,
really,
he played more than Lucas Pisa.
It's true.
What if the Predators win the Stanley Cup? Lucas Pisa's name is going to be inscribed on Lord Stanley.
We'll
cross that bridge when we get to it. But yeah. I mean, you look at that series, and not only was it good just for us to be able to get the sweep, but I mean, realistically, like the score wise, we played some dominant defense. That we only allowed, Pecorine only allowed three goals during the entire series. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah, I remember
reading
that.
Colin, I'm sure a lot of Preds fans remember this because we love trolling Blackhawks fans. But I remember in that playoff series, the motto for the Blackhawks, I don't know if it was their social media team or who came up with it, but their motto, I'm not making this up, for the playoffs that year was – quote unquote one goal, which they're trying to say like the Stanley Cup. They're trying to say the Stanley Cups are one goal, and Preds fans had a great time trolling the Blackhawks, saying you couldn't even score one goal.
That's amazing.
It took them a while.
I remember game four. It was like, because I remember seeing tweets where it was like, stand with us was our hashtag. And it was stand with us four, and then Chicago, and then it would just be one goal because we won 4-1 in that last game. But yeah, I mean, and you look at the roster, like you're right about how much the roster, like you kind of lose sight of how much of those guys are still here. Like the only three guys that scored in that playoff run that are no longer on this roster are Freddie Gaudreau, and then James Neal and Craig Smith, and then Kevin Fiala as well. Those are the four of them. And then really, like, everybody else is pretty much intact. It's just that everybody's a little bit older, but you would think with some of these guys, they got more experience. And so
you got to wonder, can these players that are from that team, that are on this current team, can they flip that switch and can they do it one more time? Can they just get it going? Can they dig deep? Can they maybe remember how it's felt to get eliminated in the playoffs the last 3 years, in the qualifiers, in 2019 against the Stars, in 2018 against the Winnipeg Jets. Can they bottle all that anger up and be like, all right, this is our chance. Let's dig deep. Let's do it. That's, I mean.
And they need to tell the young guys, explain that 2016-2017 run to those guys and maybe get them in on that, you know, feeling of what it's like to make it to a Stanley Cup final.
I mean, the thing is, a lot of them were young guys back when that happened too, especially, yeah. I mean, when we had the injuries to Fiala, the injuries to Johansson, all those guys, like, we needed, and I think even Mike Fisher was out for a couple games too. Like, we needed the young guys to step up, and they did. That's really what got Freddie Gaudreau, you know, his chance. And I mean, he kind of lit it up for us. I kind of miss him a little bit, you know, side note there. But I mean, like, the thing is, like, the math of a Stanley Cup run is pretty easy, right? Like, you got to win, you got to be the first team to win 16 games. Yep. You can't lose four to a single opponent. That's it. So, you know, what are we going to do? I mean, that's the biggest hurdle for us right now, as far as teams, is we've beaten the Lightning. Granted, it wasn't with Vasilevsky, but, you know, can we beat the Hurricanes? If we can beat the Hurricanes, if we come out of the first round, the sky's the limit.
Anything it's going to start – if they beat the Hurricanes in the first round, obviously if they get in first, they still got work to do. We already talked about that.
Yeah,
but if they get in, and they beat the Hurricanes, it's going to start – everyone's going to instantly start thinking about 2016-17. You won't be able to help it. And you can't compare it to 2017-18 because that was the President's Trophy team, and losing in the second round was a massive disappointment.
Yeah, I mean
we expected to get out of the first round and beat the Colorado Avalanche.
Yeah,
so you can't compare it to that year.
We've expected it every year since then, and it just hasn't.
And realistically, like, I mean, yeah, if we get out of that first round, like it's basically putting everybody else on notice. It kind of puts the pressure off the Preds because at that point, like, even from the jump, like, they're playing spoiler, right? So as soon as they get there, like, they got that look in their eye.
And that's what happened in the 2017 playoff run. They sweep Chicago. The league was put on notice. It was all people could talk about. It was blowing up on social media. It was crazy. It was all over. It was all over the sports headlines. Even at the time, ESPN, who didn't cover hockey a lot at the time, they were talking about it like it was Barry Melrose was going nuts over it. And then the Preds had to play the St. Louis Blues, and you had people who were like, all right, that was fun. It was great to beat the Blackhawks, to sweep them, but we were still worried about that as well. And then I'm pretty sure the Preds won that series in six games. It was a really – that was a knockdown, drag-out series. But the Preds knock out the Blues, and then that's when people are really getting amped up. They're like, okay, we might be able to do this. And then we get the Anaheim Ducks, another hated rival at the time. That team was not a likable team with Ryan Getzlaf and Ryan Kessler, and that team was not liked at all. Corey Perry was on that team as well.
Yep, yes,
and
he was.
So that was a hated Anaheim Ducks team. Preds beat them in six games, and then they go to the Cup final. Of course, they lose to the Pittsburgh Penguins, who was loaded. But my point is this: okay, the reason why we're making this comparison, I know people get sick of it. They're like, why are we comparing these two teams? They're completely different. Because the trends are similar.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is.
They're very similar. And you can't help but wonder, okay, because there's also a lot of people out there who are upset. They're like, the Preds didn't do the right thing at the trade deadline. They should have traded assets. I was one of them that said it. So I put myself in this category. Didn't do it. They kept the team together. They decided to make the playoff push, and if they can go ahead and get in, that's gonna, you know, that might reaffirm their position there. And then, but a lot of people out there, real quick, are saying, what's it all for? Why did we go through all this just to get embarrassed by the Carolina Hurricanes in the first round? And Exhibit A is the 2016-17 Predators.
Yeah. Well, you even look at like comparisons. Like, yes, we didn't make any splashes in the trade deal, and we got Erik Gudbranson, womp womp. But then look at 2016-2017. Do you know who got in the trade deadline then? I know it's one guy's gonna get you hype. It's Cody McLeod and Vernon Fiddler. Like, we weren't making splashes. We were making death pieces at a time where we were not projected to make the playoffs, just like we weren't, you know, similar to how we were a couple weeks ago, months ago. And so, I mean, really, it's a psychology thing. Like, when we were in the 2018 run after the President's Trophy, like, we were expected to get to at least the Western Conference Finals and to be a Cup contender, and we got stuffed by a more physical Winnipeg team. That's what really kind of started this run of we need to get more physical and really put it in earnest this year with some of the acquisitions we had in the offseason. But with you know, with a 2017 run, and even with a potential, you know, fingers crossed run in 2021, like, you're playing with house money. Nobody expects you to do anything. Every time you win a game, every time you advance, like, you're just surprising more and more people. And it's a mentality of why not us? Like, that's the Smashville blue collar way of let's get in and let's do some damage. And you know what? We may not come out of the series as the victors, but we're going to make sure that we bleed some bruises and we're going to play our way of hockey and make sure we have fun doing it. So, you know, that's my thought process is if this team wants to repeat anything from 2017, it's take that mentality of you're playing with house money and have fun with it. And just let's go for a ride.
Yep. They're definitely you get in and everything else after that, it's icing on the cake.
Yep.
They're definitely not the same types of teams as far as that's concerned. 2016-17 team was a more complete roster, I would say, especially with veteran leadership. And you've got a lot of your veterans now who are on that team as well are way past their prime, we probably think. Not way past their prime, but they're past their peak more than they were then. And so, you know, it's one of those things where – again, let's just get in and then we'll deal with it. We'll deal with the consequences. And so I do think it's fun to get that team, though, because that was a really fun team. That really brought the city together. I remember, and I know you're going to get your diehard hockey purists who are fans of teams who have multiple Stanley Cups. They're probably going to laugh at this. But I remember being in Nashville at Fleet Street Pub, which is in Printer's Alley in downtown Nashville, and I watched – the game clinching Western Conference final game where we knocked out the Ducks. And I can tell you, it felt like we already won the cup. I can promise you. Like, people were hugging each other. I was hugging strangers. We were buying each other shots of Jameson. Like, we were just having a blast. It was awesome. Like, people were tagging each other's hands in the streets, walking down the sidewalk. Like, it was a great feeling. It brought the city together. You had the Bridgestone Arena Plaza, people just like packing in. The whole city came around the Preds, and it would be so awesome to see that happen again. And so let's get in these playoffs and let's have some fun here, guys. That's kind of how I'm feeling.
What about you, Colin? What did you do? What did you do down there? Did you go hang out?
So I was in Nashville. I was actually in Louisville at the time. But it was funny because Louisville, you think it's pretty far north from Nashville. There's a ton of Predators fans in Louisville. It would kind of surprise some people.
Where are they at? Because I want to meet them.
in the Shelbyville area. So you know where Double Dogs is in Shelbyville?
Oh, yeah.
They play the games. And actually, I think the manager at the time was from Nashville. So he was a Predators fan. So like there was a sizable crowd. But like even then, like it was just the fact that like people outside of Nashville knew who Nashville was because of that run. Like, I'd wear my Predators jersey or my Predators stuff around, and people would be like, "Oh, you guys are having a great run. Hope you guys can." Because people want to see that upset. They want to see, especially in a market that doesn't have a hockey team, they're not going to necessarily be so much of a purist unless they're like maybe like a Blackhawks fan. But like they're like, "We really hope you guys beat, you know, either the Ducks or the Penguins or whoever we were playing," because they want us to see. They wanted to see something new, and it was what this team offered, was something new, something that was gritty. You know, we continued to beat the odds even after, you know, Johansson goes down and Fiala gets injured. Like, we're still competing. You know, a guy like Freddie Gaudreau goes on a pretty good tear offensively. Like, it was just a lot of fun to see in Louisville. And then when I did go drive down to Nashville, I mean, the city is like – it was – I've never seen Nashville so excited about anything. Yeah. And I've seen pictures. I remember when Titans made it to the Super Bowl, like the city was excited, but like it wasn't happening in Nashville. So the city couldn't rally behind it the way Nashville did. I mean, like downtown was just nuts. And when you go back and you watch some of the YouTube videos, like any of the you know, archive video of like the flyovers of Broadway, and it's not even Broadway. I mean, it's dipping into every street around it and just seeing all the people that were packed there and watching people watching on the lawn. Like, it's just, Nashville needs that, especially as much as Nashville has been through the last few years. Like, Nashville needs something like that to bring the city together again. I mean, I would love, just from an emotional standpoint, to see the city come together for something like that. So,
yeah, we don't do this very often, but you know, David Poile, you know, there was a gritty 2016-2017. David Poile has done a good job of getting this team together, and they're more gritty. So now they just got to get in the playoffs, and hopefully they can catch some of that magic again.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, like, we've seen – they're not putting up the stats, but we've seen, like glimpses of it. Like, Duchesne and Hall, that connection. If that connection starts clicking, that's going to be crazy. If Cunning gets back to where he was when he came back
from injury, let's be honest. We see crazy stuff happen in the Stanley Cup playoffs all the time. Let's talk about Columbus swept Tampa Bay.
Yep.
the playoffs before this past playoffs in the bubble. Yeah. So it can happen. So let's just even that 2016-17 playoff postseason. Mm-hmm. The Ottawa Senators made a crazy run. Our friend Ray Perkin of the Hockey Writers talked about how the Ottawa Senators went on a very similar playoff run that season,
yep,
where they weren't expected to be in the Eastern Conference Finals.
We were hoping to see them.
So let's just take
– and then once,
yeah,
once
right? we – So let's one, let's take
– Go ahead. I was just going to say real
let's
quick.
Let's take care of business. Let's not worry about what the Dallas Stars do. Let's prove we can beat the Carolina Hurricanes, and then Rich is going to finish off episode 42 for us.
Oh, I was just going to say, once we get out of these division games, then it's going to be really crazy because these guys haven't seen each other. So I don't know.
Anything could happen.
Anything could happen. Yep. 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 Definitely.
The playoffs are going to be a blast. The playoffs are going to be a blast.
Can't wait.
All right. So thanks for listening, everybody. This has been episode 42 of the Catfish and Ice podcast. This is Chad Mitten with Colin Bloom and Rich Howe. We love bringing the podcast to you. We have a blast doing it. We're hoping we're going to be bringing you some playoff episodes coming up here shortly. We need the Preds to just get us one more win, or we can just go ahead and wait for the Tampa Bay Lightning to do that for us.
We need Tampa
Either
Bay.
Either way, we are excited about getting some playoff hockey here. All right. So this has been episode 42. Take care. Have a great week, and we will your week. We will see you next week for episode 43. Hopefully, we're talking about the Preds playoffs by then. Everyone, stay safe out there.
See ya.
What's up, everybody? It's Jaren from the Hockey Podcast Network's newest show, the Windy City Benders Podcast. My co-host Tanner and I bring our unique takes on Blackhawks hockey.
Us on the show have been a pro Carlton guy. He's the right coach for the situation.
Giving it to our rivals.
That's one of the things that kind of sucks. I wish we would have had the Blues in our division this year because we are trash.
As well as bringing in some guests from the NHL.
Please welcome to the show goaltender Scott Darling.
The Eagle himself, Ed Belfour.
Brian Bickle.
David Boland.
Letterkenny.
The show started out with basically a beer league hockey team.
And anybody who loves the game. Find us on all your favorite podcast apps, the Hockey Podcast Network website, and on social media at WCB Podcasts.